call the next case. We have Ms. Kirby and Mr. Cruz versus Officer Sherwin and Officer Magala. That's case 22-11109. Good morning, counsel.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Paul Darajati. I represent Officers Magala and Sherwin, and I am here to argue on their behalf regarding their denial of qualified immunity at the trial court.
It seems to me that the argument is a really narrow one. It's actually a fairly unique qualified immunity case that I've seen. Most qualified immunity cases were arguing about whether the alleged conduct was, in fact, constitutionally excessive or not.
Yes.
That doesn't really seem to be an argument that we're making here.
No, it's not.
Right. In fact, I think in the reply brief, you essentially concede that if true, and no one's saying that what is alleged happened, that still has to be found by a finder of fact, but if true, that would be a constitutionally excessive. The argument you seem to be making is the pleading is not plausibly alleged that your clients, Officers Sherwin and Magala, were the ones who actually committed the violence or participated or contributed to the violence against Ms. Kirby and Mr. Cruz, correct?
That is exactly what we're arguing.
Yes, okay. Here's how I read the complaint. Again, we have to read it in the light most favorable to not you, but to the plaintiffs here. There's an allegation that the sheriff instructed officers to be physical with the protesters. Again, these are just the allegations. The officers were in the vicinity and close proximity to where the violence happened. They were the people who signed the arrest reports to have it happened. And it's alleged that them and or unknown officers were the ones that committed the violence. Why is it not plausible at this stage, at least as an alternative allegation, that the officers who signed the report were close by, were instructed to commit violence in a protest that resulted in a lot of violence, and that it is alleged that they and or someone else committed the violence, cannot be plausibly alleged that they did it.
Sure. And I focus strictly on the allegations in the amended complaint against my officers specifically.
Right.
The district court, at page 12 of its opinion, basically held that based upon paragraphs 54 and 55, where there's this and or dichotomy,
right,
combined with the allegations that these protesters were there peacefully, not threatening the police, not throwing rocks or doing whatever might have happened that day, the district court held that because of juxtaposition of those two allegations, that there was enough to claim an excessive force.
Right, and we reviewed that de novo anyway, and so I've laid out for you, I've read the complaint, I think we all have, many times, and I've laid out for you what I think are at least plausible allegations that we have to take as true for purposes of this hearing. Why, when read together, is it not plausible to say, doesn't have to be, in other words, slightly above possible, but plausible, that these officers were the ones who committed, at least participated in the violence?
Because if you look at paragraphs 23, 25, which state that the same officer who actually laid hands on the plaintiffs here were the ones that committed the excessive force violations, then you go to paragraphs 26 through 29, they actually separate the claims out. 26 and 27 address the false arrest claims and specifically name my clients, and then 27 and 29, they specifically addressed the John Doe defendants using excessive force against
so
the plaintiffs.
Is your argument that because they don't allege, they only allege with specificity as to your clients being the ones who did the alleged unlawful arrest, but don't with specificity allege that your clients were the ones who unlawfully attacked Kirby and Cruz, that therefore it's not plausible?
Yes, Your Honor, because if you look at those specific paragraphs and then you compare them to paragraph 32, where they use this close proximity language, it almost leads, not almost, it does lead the reader up until that point to understand that.
We don't parse these things like statutes and contracts. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand that it could plausibly be read the way that you are, but just because there's one plausible reading of it doesn't exclude other plausible readings of it. And that's the thing about a complaint. It could be read and viewed, and inferences could be made in any number of directions. One direction is what you're saying is there's arrest officers and then there's violence officers. But another is that the arrest officers were nearby, were instructed to commit violence, and in fact, them or the others were the ones who did commit the violence. And I can't tell you for sure at the moment, but why is that not plausible to suggest that the officers who actually signed the arrest report and were nearby when the whole thing happened and were told to participate in violence were ones committing violence?
If you look at the totality of the complaint, where they commingle the claims and the defendants in count one, they're saying that up until that point, they're saying that my clients filled out the arrest dockets and they committed
false arrests. That's important to me, that they filled out the arrest.
Mm-hmm. I apologize, Your Honor.
I mean, we can kind of take judicial notice of when an officer fills out an arrest warrant. He's got a lot of information. And the inference in this case is that they were right there and saw it.
If they are...
There's another problem with a case like this. There's only so much that a plaintiff can allege because the defendants or the sheriff, let's say, has all of the evidence. It's almost the kind of a case where you have a presumption. But that would be an innovation in the law if we did one. But the point is, all of the evidence is in the defendant's possession, as it were. And so if they allege anything more and didn't know about it, they're violating Rule 11, aren't they?
Our concern here is that they...
No, you agree with that?
I would agree with that, yes. Yeah, If they make allegations
they cannot prove because they don't have the information, they'd violate Rule 11.
I agree with that.
So you got a huge ethical problem going on here, too.
Our argument here is that the plaintiffs were not in danger of putting incorrect information in the complaint. They didn't put barely any information in the complaint. And I would argue that under Florida's statutory regime for public records, they could have gained some information before filing their complaint and putting enough factual...
But counsel, if you're in a melee and two or more people are beating you and you're not exactly sure who that is, but you do know that two officers wrote the arrest reports, they were close by, and the officers were generally instructed to commit violence that day, and a lot of others were committing violence on them and others. Why is that not plausible that they were the ones that participated? Not that it happened, not that we know for sure, but plausible.
Because this circuit has set out, your honors have set out a standard elements that they need to suffice to state a claim for failure to intervene. They need to be there.
We're not talking about failure to intervene. This is an issue that I have that we haven't quite explored yet, but I'm only talking about excessive force. The district court's order, the district court read count one as an excessive force count, clearly. Right. It was argued to them below as an excessive force count. On excessive force, the district court found that the officers plausibly contributed to the excessive force. That's the exact words that the district court used. So my only question is it not plausible that they not, I don't know that I disagree with you on if we view this as a failure to intervene claim, but as an excessive force claim, it seems to me that it's plausibly alleged that the officers contributed or participated in the force.
And again, I kind of circle back, and I know because of the narrowness of this issue, I keep having to circle back to the totality of the allegations in the complaint. All they're saying is that they're parsing out what each individual officer did.
What they're parsing out because they have a Rule 11 issue. So what they allege that they know for a fact is that your client signed the arrest warrant. That they can say and not be in fear that they have a Rule 11 issue. Then they, in the counts, specify that you know, your clients and or other unnamed defendants unlawfully attacked your Kirby and Cruz. So the issue here is we're at a motion to dismiss stage. I mean, this is, from my perspective, and I only speak for myself, this is more appropriate for summary judgment once there's been discovery. Because at this point, I think that they've plausibly alleged.
I'm running out of time, but I'll be happy to answer that question when I get back.
Thank you. We appreciate it, counsel. And you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Neil Henriksen on behalf of the appellees. So absolutely anchoring the claims against the two officers specifically listed in paragraphs 26 and 27 is the specific allegation from the arrest report, that they're the arresting officers. So that it, not just simply they filled out the form, but as arresting officers. And that's what as part of the
Can I ask you about the nature of the claim?
Sure.
So part of the confusion here and maybe some of the looseness with which this has been briefed and presented to us is the nature of count one. So I want to explore that and maybe drill down on that a little bit. So count one is titled what?
Excessive force.
Excessive force. And when a motion to dismiss was filed to say, hey, this needs to be dismissed because you haven't plausibly alleged that my clients committed excessive force, what did you respond in your response? Did you say, no, this is really a failure to intervene claim?
No. We right. said it was excessive force, and based on Velasquez versus City of Hialeah and other cases that say if you're an officer in right there in the proximity while excessive force is happening, it's the, as the Velasquez case said, you know, if there's a hood over someone's head and they can't see who the officer, what exact officer is doing it, that's excessive force.
So, but we agree that the concept of failure to intervene was not argued to the district court below.
No, it as not as a separate claim
right.
as part of excessive force.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And the district court, in its order, so the district court carefully reads the complaint, reads the arguments. How did the district court understand this claim? Did it ever mention failure to intervene?
No. I think the district court said plausible allegations are these two officers participated in the excessive force.
So as it lies to us, that's we only take the football as it's presented to us. We don't create the football. So the football has been created, it's handed over to us. This is handed to us as an excessive force case, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we can do away with, or like not, at least at this point, and you can feel free to do whatever you want below if this is reversed or this is remanded, but right now we have to look at this as an excessive force case.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So then as to that, the and/or is an interesting thing, and I understand the concept of we don't really know who did this, but it's never quite alleged that we don't really know who did this. That's sort of argued to us, but it's never alleged in the complaint because I think you don't want to admit that you don't actually know who struck the blow, although it's logical that you might not know. So instead, the way it's phrased is two people we don't know were there and did stuff, and these arresting officers we know were there because they're the arresting officers and they were close by. And so them and or these other people we don't know were the ones that committed the violence. That is an odd alternative pleading that I'm not sure I've seen before.
Okay. Well, Your Honor, and this is outside the pleading that I would raise, right? We had a social media video that showed the arrest. We don't believe, and there's no identification that would say this is the officer. We have no sworn testimony. We have a sworn arrest report that says here are the officers, the two appellants, that did the arrest. The social media video shows an arrest. We don't believe the sworn arrest report. It could be false. We don't know that for sure. What we know is that the government has represented, in fact, presented for prosecution to the state attorney, a sworn report saying these two are the arresting officers. That's the dilemma. That's the and/or.
Is that not enough then for Rule 11? In other words, is that not enough for Rule 11 purposes to say these were the ones who arrested and the violence occurred during the course of the arrest?
Well, we had legitimate doubt about the veracity of that arrest report about the arresting officer. It's questionable. Now, it could turn out those are the arresting officers who committed the violence, or they were right there when the violence was committed. And that's sort of the dilemma for the pleader, in terms of addressing.
I guess what I'm asking is, it would not have violated Rule 11, it would seem to me, to have sued the officers who were arrested under the plausible inference that they were the ones that committed the violence.
We did.
And then if you, through discovery, have found out that it was not, in fact, them and others, there's a mechanism for that.
Sure, but there was more than one officer. That's the Doe 1 and the Doe 2. There was not just one officer.
And I get that. And so it'd be fine to say arresting officer, you know, Officer Sherwin or Officer Magella and John Doe were the ones who did it. But the and or suggests Counsel, let me finish. It suggests that Officer Sherwin and Officer Magella did not do it, that it was only possible and not plausible that they did it.
I think after this, I would not use and or after these kind of briefings. But I think it creates a plausible allegation at this stage of the case, viewing the evidence in a light most favorable, taking the allegations as true to support the district court's denial of the motion for qualified immunity. If there are any other questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, qualified immunity exists for this very reason. Counsel is arguing to you that he didn't know who did what. They're suing everybody. Basically, a shotgun style plea.
Yeah, but qualified immunity, I'm sorry to interrupt, but qualified immunity is not about this. It's about whether the action that happened violated, an officer knew that action would have violated a constitutional right. Qualified immunity doesn't exist to say, well, it could have been this guy or that guy that did it. That's not qualified immunity.
Absolutely.
Because the standard for qualified immunity is that every reasonable officer would know that action was unconstitutional, and therefore they're not entitled to an immunity.
But they still have to articulate a constitutional violation, and here they haven't.
Well, they have. We're not sure it's against us or someone else.
Exactly.
But you've conceded they've alleged a constitutional violation
against some entity somewhere. But these two officers are before the court, and it's from their point of view. And I understand the analysis is taken from the material facts of the case in the plaintiff's point of view. But from their point of view, they have asserted that there is not a constitutional violation alleged against them. And
why was the arrest report not enough? In other words, let's assume a complaint that said this. Officer Sherwin and Officer Magella arrested Ms. Kirby and Mr. Cruz. They signed the arrest report as the arresting officers. And during the course of the arrest, this violence happened, which you concede was excessive. Would that not plausibly allege that they were the ones that committed the violence?
If the plaintiffs have alleged that they actually did it, but they
I just
they
told
never
you what the allegation. Don't fight my hypothetical. Go with it. I just gave you my hypothetical. Does that plausibly allege a violation?
Under those circumstances, yes, Your Honor.
So I just don't see why this is all that much different just because they added the and or another guy or another person we don't know.
Because they're not identifying. Counsel is arguing that this is a straight-out excessive force. He's saying this is not a failure to intervene. In paragraph 32, counsel saying that they were not there actually administering the blows. So how can, I mean, you can either have one or the other, but you can't have both. And that's kind of what they're trying to present to the court. So
tell me where in paragraph 32 it says they were not there.
Each of the defendants and other JSO officers were in close proximity to
That means they were there. I mean,
close proximity, I mean, is a relative term. I don't know what
I know,
means.
But I understand it's not metaphysically defined for you here, but we view it in the light most favorable to the plaintiff here. Close proximity is really close.
And again, I know that we're saying that this is not a failure to intervene case, but the failure to intervene cases, this is not Velasquez.
I agree. If they had only alleged failure to intervene, and all they said was two people were close by, I agree with you. That would be insufficient. Right. You're 100% right as to that. But in an excessive force case, where the only question is, did they plausibly allege whether two officers were the ones who committed the violence? And it is alleged, one, the sheriff instructed his underlings to commit violence on the protesters. Two, that these people were close by. Three, They signed the arrest affidavit. Four, they were the arresting officers. Five, them and or someone else committed the violence. How does that plausibly allege that they committed the violence?
If we rely specifically, as the district court did, focus straight on paragraphs 54 and 55 to the exclusion of the other paragraphs.
Yeah, but we reviewed de novo. I'm not bound by the district court's order here.
I understand.
I might have written it differently, but we're not bound by it. On a de novo review with the allegations that I just told you, would that not plausibly state that the officers, again, plausibly, not that they did, not that it's going to be proven, but plausibly that they were the ones who contributed to some of the violence?
I would submit to the court that it's more of a possibility that they engaged in the violence. That and or dichotomy creates, they're alleging a possibility as opposed to a plausibility.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We'll call our last case.